Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and today you're listening to What's Brewing, which is a series all about how ministry and mission can happen in all aspects of our lives. And I'm really excited about my guest today. Her name is Emily Salisbury. Hi, Emily.
Hello. I'm excited to be here, Carla. Thanks for having me on.
So excited to have you here. So Emily and I were chatting a couple weeks ago, and she was telling me about her job. And I was thinking about what an incredible ministry she provides in her job. And I asked her if she would want to be on the podcast, and she said yes. And I'm super excited for you to hear about it. So Emily, before we jump into your job, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I grew up in Utah in the United States, and I grew up LDS. Is my religion of origin, you could say, and experienced a faith transition within the last couple years. Around 2020 is kind of when it all fell apart, and that's the year that I started engaging with Community of Christ and just kind of getting to know the church, and realized that a lot of the things that Community of Christ stands for are things that really resonate with my soul. And so here I am. And we are trying to figure out the spiritual journey one step at a time. But as for my other parts of my background, I've always been very musical. And I started taking piano lessons probably when I was about 4, 5, 6 years old, somewhere in there. And it's just always been a really important part of my life, to the point that when I started thinking about career options and like, okay, what am I going to do with my life? I really like didn't have anything in mind besides music. That was just like, I'm going to do something music, because that's just always been my life. And I felt good about that. And so I went up to Utah State. That's where I studied, is at Utah State. And I went to there to study piano. So I was in the piano program there, and it was fine. it was difficult for me. You know, there were really great things about the program, but it was hard for me at the same time. The competitive aspect of it was really difficult for me. And I was starting to lose that spark, that love for music. And so I started looking at some other options and landed on the music therapy program that they have up there, and just fell in love. And I'll explain a little bit more about what that is and my work in music therapy as we go on in the interview. But yeah, that's kind of where I landed. And that was a choice that really changed the trajectory of my entire life. And now I'm highly focused on using music for healing and for expression, for connection with people who have a hard time with those things, for whatever reason that might be.
Yeah. I mean, when you were talking about music therapy, I knew that music therapy existed, but I actually have never really experienced music therapy in my life and saw what it's like. So could you talk a little bit about what music therapy is and, you know, what are the benefits of it?
Right. Yeah. So music therapy on a broad level is basically you're using music in a therapeutic context for a non-musical goal. And that may be a goal related to someone's emotional health. That may be a goal related to somebody's physical health, but it's a non-musical goal. So that's what distinguishes it between, like, for example, you know, taking piano lessons or being in a an orchestra or a band or, you know, something where you are engaging musical, and the main goal is the music, right? Whereas in music therapy, it's a mental health profession where we're utilizing the elements of music and the music making process to benefit us in other ways, in other areas of our life. And a lot of that is also embedded in the therapist-client relationship, right? And so there's a good amount of various skills that you have as a music therapist. And part of it is the understanding of music and why and how and getting that musical training. And then another part of it is the understanding of what it means to be a therapist and how to be a therapist and why you're being a therapist and what that looks like. And then you also have to have an understanding of the, you know, physiological impact and the emotional impact that you're having, that the music is having on the client or the patient. So it's kind of like just a bunch of random skills packed into your bag as a music therapist that you kind of have to develop over time. And yeah, so that's kind of from a broad perspective what music therapy is. And what it looks like is very dependent on what situation you're applying it to, right? So in my experience, I've worked everything basically from addiction recovery to children with developmental disabilities and everywhere in between. And obviously the work that you're doing is based off of what is the need for this person, this individual, where addiction recovery, you know, you're very focused on supporting that person in developing their sense of self, first of all, in reconstructing their sense of self. What do I look like when I am not addicted, right? And how do I develop better coping skills as a person who is not addicted? And so these are the type of things that we're working on addiction recovery. Whereas when you're working with, you know, children with disabilities, for example, you're focused on, okay, how do I support this person in engaging socially in the best way possible for them? Or how do I help them to maximize their capacity in, like, in movement or in you know, other areas of their life? How do I help them maximize their strengths, and how do I help them develop in areas that are difficult for them?
Oh my gosh, that's just fascinating to me. And the very fact that you have to have so many different skills. Like, I know you play the guitar and I know you play piano. I don't know if you play any other musical instruments. Do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I played cello for most of, like, through high school. That was my instrument. It was cello. I experimented with some other string instruments as well, but, you know, yeah. So even at, like, as a music therapist, you have to be pretty proficient in, like, percussion instruments and, you know, just like random stuff because there are lots of different directions that you could go. And so, yeah, anyway, but yeah.
So you had that music part and obviously you're very musical, and Emily has sung a couple of times and played a couple of times for the congregation in Salt Lake City. And it has just been stunningly beautiful. Like, people have been stopped in their tracks listening to you. Like, it's just been beautiful. So you have that incredible talent, and then you have to have that therapy piece. You have to be empathetic. You have to try and understand where they're coming from. Like you're talking about, like, it takes a lot of skills to be a music therapist. And I'm pretty impressed, Emily. I must admit, I'm very impressed. So can you talk to us about maybe, like, what a session would look like? Do you have sessions with groups? Do you have sessions with just one person? How does it look, and what do you do? Like, how does it start and all that stuff?
Right. Yeah. So right now I'm mainly working in senior care and end of life care. And so I'm currently working towards a certification specifically in hospice and palliative care. And most of my clients are seniors. So yes, I run individual sessions. I run group sessions. My individual sessions, most of all of the work that I do in hospice is one-on-one with our hospice patients. So in those sessions, we're focused on supporting their end-of-life process and helping them through their preparatory grief in preparation of their towards, you know, their own dying, in communicating with their family concerning their needs, their desires. Specifically, if I were to give an example of a scenario, there was a lady I was working with, we'll call her Pat. So Pat was experiencing some difficulties in communication due to dementia and a stroke that she had experienced. And so a lot of her ability to speak was gone at this point. It wasn't entirely gone, but it was very hard for her to speak, and it took a lot of time for her to communicate. And so because of this, her family began to speak for her and in behalf of her, and would not give her the patience or the space to express herself because it took her a long time, and people tended to talk over her anyway. And so she would kind of just throw in the towel and give up, you know? So I came in for a session with Pat, and I presented, you know, some different songs to her, specifically surrounding end of life. And if you know the song, I'll Fly Away, it's a traditional Christian song. We sang that one. It's all about at the end of this life, I'll fly away and I'll be with God. There was another song that we sang, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. That's a very frequently requested song in my work in hospice, and one that I'll throw out a lot to my patients because it's surrounding that longing for to move on, basically, right? And so I'm throwing these songs out to her and kind of providing some musical space for her to react to these songs. And through this process, she was able to communicate some of what she was feeling to me, and a lot of it was prompted by yes no questions that I would ask her, close-ended questions where I would just ask her, are you feeling blank, are you feeling frustrated, are you feeling sad, do you need something from your family, you know? And she would kind of answer yes no, and then through that process I was able to get more from her because I was giving her the space where she would say, she said basically to me, she's like, I just worry that they won't be okay after I'm gone. I worry about them because I know I'm dying and I know that I'm going to be gone soon, and I worry that they're going to be okay. And so it was through providing that musical space and that emotional space for her that she was able to communicate that to me, and that I was able to help her communicate that to her family and help them understand this is what she's feeling. And her daughter just fell apart, and just having that realization that her mom could still tell her what she needed was huge. And and dear Pat, she died pretty quickly after that. She was ready to go, and she just needed to know that her family would be okay, and she was gone. Within about a week, she was gone.
What a beautiful gift you've given her. And you've made me cry a little bit. but I actually have another question. How do you keep it together all the time, Emily?
Oh, I don't. I don't. Let me tell you. Like, I was bawling through that session. And I bawled through a lot of sessions. And it's just, you don't, you know, like, especially when you're just entering into such a vulnerable space with them, it's very touching, and it's Yeah, you kind of, that's why I only work 3 days a week, Carla. Is because you need some self-care after something like that. You need some time to process, you know? But anyway, so that's kind of what a session might look like in end-of-life care. And like I said, with those are generally one-on-one individual sessions, because that's what's going to be most beneficial for those patients. I also work in assisted living, so seniors living in assisted care facilities. And my work in those situations is generally group work. It's generally focused on the losses that they've experienced, as far as number one, they're not living in their house anymore. And that's hard. That's a hard thing to deal with for most of those people, you know. A lot of them have lost people that are really dear to them, and they're kind of sitting in their grief. And the generation specifically that I'm working with, you know, a lot of them just have never really had permission to express those negative feelings. And so when we're working in groups, I see a lot of this like tension between like, let's just talk about what's going on. And I see this tug of war between like, oh, can I really talk about that? You know? And because that's just not something that they're used to, and that they've ever really been given permission to do for a lot of my patients, a lot of my clients. So group work, if I were to walk you through kind of the structure of the groups that I run, some of them are more, I run like open groups where like anyone's invited, and I run closed groups. So in a closed group situation, basically we are going around, we're checking in with everybody and just checking in with the group as far as, okay, what are the things that have brought you joy recently? What are the frustrations that you've experienced? Let's talk openly about where we're at and what do we need from the music today? What do we need from group? Do we need music for helping us to feel optimistic? Do we need music for connection with the group? Do we need music for venting about our frustrations or to sit in our grief for a minute in order to process and in order to find a way to deal with it a little bit better, right? What is it that we need? You know, and so I totally walk in as a blank slate. You know, that's the goal, at least. Sometimes I bring my own stuff in, and that's, you know, and that's just life. You know, that's hard. And as a therapist, you have to recognize whenever you're bringing in your own stuff, and really try not to. Right? But yeah, as much as I can, I'm walking in as a blank slate. And just asking them, what do you need? You know, and the responses that I get are just wildly different, you know, depending on what day it is, what time of year. If it's Christmas time, we've got some serious grief that a lot of people are dealing with, right? Because they're thinking about previous years, previous Christmases, and comparing that to now, you know, things like that. So oftentimes, so we'll check in with each other with blah, we'll check in with each other and then figure out what is it that we need, and we'll engage in some sort of music experience that supports that goal. That may look like bringing in familiar songs, that may look like writing our own song, that may look like musical improv, singing, dancing sometimes, you know, or instrument playing, you know, things like that.
And I think you told me earlier that in one of the group sessions, there are some people like music just lights people up in a way that not a lot of things do. It's what you said, and I believe you. And that there are some people in the session. The staff came up to you later and said, "These people have never asked to stay in some sort of like presenter thing, and they stayed for you because the music just lit them up so much. And I just think, what a gift you are giving these people. What a gift. So they can be real, they can say what's really on their heart, and they can feel hopefully uplifted by your talent and by your music.
Yeah, I've had that reaction a lot. And I don't say that as like a way to, like, you know, toot my own horn, so to say, but just as an example of, like, when you stop and listen for real, and you allow space for that person to tell you what it is that they're feeling, man, like, that does wonders. And that's something that so many of these people, of my people, of my clients, they just don't get a lot of, you know, especially my clients that are dealing with and experiencing dementia or other health or mental complications, where people have just, like, their staff, their family, whoever it is, oftentimes just kind of give up in communicating with them. And yeah, it's hard. And yeah, it's different, but it doesn't mean it's impossible.
Well, in a community of Christians, we would say that you are helping people know that they have worth, because we believe in the worth of all persons. So you are listening. And one way that you can show that someone has worth is by sitting and taking time and listening with them. And that is something that you do. I can already tell. I am not one of your clients, but I can already tell you do a wonderful job of that, sitting and listening with them. And that you're making a huge difference in these people's lives. Like, I didn't even realize before you told me that, I didn't really think about how, when people have to leave their homes, how big of a deal that is, what a big grieving process that is, but of course it is. And I've never thought about that. I've had aunts and grandparents who have left their homes and who have had to go into assisted living. And I never sat down and asked them how they were feeling about it or anything like that. So I think, what a gift that you're giving these people. And I'm just so thrilled that you get to be a minister in their lives.
I am too, honestly. Like, I'm so happy to be in a position where I am to dedicate that time to just sitting with them and to validating their frustrations and to helping them develop some coping mechanisms to help them move forward and to take advantage of the goodness that is still in their life and help them to recognize that. Right.
So you also said you worked with children. I don't know what a session with a child would look like. Is it usually a group session with a child, or is it also one-on-one? What does that look like? And what kind of songs do they request or they like to sing?
That's an excellent question. So I don't currently work with children, but I did as part of my internship. And these children specifically were children that have intellectual or developmental disabilities of various sorts. And the model that I was working under when I was working with children was you know, quite a bit different than my approach now. And it was a little bit more focused on the educational aspect and the behavioral aspect. And that was due to the fact that we were in an educational setting, we were in a special needs school, and so we had to be doing work that was aligning with their IEPs, right? And so the work that we were generally doing in that situation was I would have specific children who reacted really well to the music therapy experience and chart specifically on them. I would select an IEP goal that I felt like I could support through a musical experience. For example, there was one child that I was trying to help understand the concept of numbers. And it's such an abstract concept at times, if you think about it. Like, what is the number two? I don't know. Right? And what does that feel like on a drum? Bam, bam, done. Right? So we're working on the concept of two, and we're also working on impulse control, right? Because, oh, it's so much fun to play that drum. I just want to hit it so many times, right? So things like that, where we're helping not only, like, you know, we're working on an educational goal, but we're also helping in some regulations, some internal regulation, and responding to the things that are being asked of you, things like that. So if I were to go back and work with children now, it would definitely be more of a focus on their educational health, or sorry, not their educational health, their emotional health and their attachment, as far as healthy attachment to their caregivers, to their family, to the people around them, and supporting them in those areas of development.
Gosh, I mean, I feel like a lot of what you do, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have to think on your feet a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Very much so.
Every night when I'm putting my daughter, who's almost 4, to bed, I tell her a story, and then she usually wants a lullaby about the story I just told. So I have to make up a song as I'm singing it. And it is hard. And usually they sound terrible. She loves them all because, you know, she's not that discerning right now, but she loves them all. But it is hard to come up with a song off the cuff. It's hard to like get there. And I don't know if that's what you do on a regular basis, but man, I'm very impressed if that's what you do.
That's what we do. That's a lot of what we do. And yes, it's still hard for me. There's some days where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm on top of my game and we are just jamming, and I can throw out some lyrics and I can incorporate somebody else's lyrics and we can write a song. And there are other days where I'm like, wow, what am I doing? I just like do not know where this is supposed to be going. So, yeah.
Yes, I'm already kind of dreading the day when my daughter's like, mommy, that doesn't rhyme, or mommy, that doesn't make any sense, or mommy, I don't know what you're doing, but it's not great.
Yeah,
it's pretty tough. And that's, I just find that super impressive. Well, Emily, I've really enjoyed hearing about what you do, like how you minister in your everyday life. And is there anything else that you wanted to say that I didn't ask about, or anything else about music therapy that you definitely just didn't want to miss?
Well, there's one story that I wanted to share related to, it was working with another hospice patient. And the reason I want to share this is because it kind of highlights my work as a spiritual guide in end of life care. And so my patient, we'll call her Susan. So Susan was, she was living in an assisted living facility, and I had a strong feeling that I needed to go see her, you know, at various points. When she came on our census, you know, there was just something about her name that stood out to me, and I'm like, okay, I need to go. And I tried a few times, and she was sleeping, and she was just like, you know, not quite in the space. And I'm like, okay, it's fine. I'll keep trying. And so I walked in one day, and she was in a lot of pain. She was experiencing cirrhosis of the liver, had a ton of inflammation going on. And she was basically just doubled over in pain. She was on lots of pain medication and still like was not like, it was not under control. She it was just very, that kind of demonstrates how much pain she was in, right? She was on morphine and she was still in pain. And and so I walk in there and she is just having a hard time even communicating with me because she's just so focused on her pain. So I pull out my guitar and we start singing. I ask her, you know, as far as musical preferences, what she likes, and she told me Christian music. So we started in with the song Peace Like a River, and she immediately responded and started singing along as best as she could. And as we went along, here's the think on your feet moment, right? That has to happen. We started adapting the lyrics to more specifically what she was dealing with. So as we went along, it started, I've got peace like a river, I've got peace like a river. And we go through this, and then I start adapting the lyrics slowly. I've got peace in my body. I've got peace in my body. And we're ramping on that. And then I'm trying to support the fact that she is having a hard time with her body right now, right? But helping her to feel that she is more powerful than the pain that she's experiencing, right? And so we're singing, I am one with my body. I am one with my body. Trying to reinforce the completeness of her experience, right? And trying to say yes to the pain. Yes, let it in, because guess what? You got this. You can do this. And yes, this is part of your experience right now, and that is okay, you know, because you are more powerful than your pain. And pretty soon I watched her come down and down and down until she was at peace. And it's not that anything really changed as far as what was going on with her liver or her body and as a whole, but she was in control through that experience. So I came back the next day because I got a report that she was having some spiritual turmoil surrounding end of life, and she was having a lot of anxiety. And so I come back the very next day, and I start asking her questions. Okay, so what's going on? I heard that you're dealing with some anxiety, and can you tell me a little bit more about that? And she basically just told me, she's like, I don't know if I've done good enough for God. I don't know if I've done good enough. And kind of explained a little bit more about what specifically that meant to her. And I told her, you know, I gave her some reassurance as far as like her connection to God, you know, and asking her more questions about what does it mean? What does it mean for you to be good with God, you know, questions like this to help her to start thinking through it, and supporting this by some familiar Christian songs that kind of reinforced her connection with God, right? And she jumped right in. She was singing along, and she had just tears streaming down her face. And she, by the end of that, I looked at her and I'm like, God knows you and God loves you. Do you know that? Do you feel that? And she's like, yes, I finally feel that. I finally do. And the next day she was transitioning, and within a week she was gone. It really demonstrates to me the spiritual nature of the end of life, right? And how once she was ready, and once she felt her body was ready, her mind was ready, her soul was ready, then she was able to let go, and she was able to feel good, feel at peace, I should say, right, with the end of her life. And I just am very grateful. I'm just very grateful that I've been able to take that role of helping people to heal and to become more integrated in mind and soul and body through a musical experience. And I'm just very grateful.
Well, I am 1 billion percent sure that there are many people who are grateful for you. Of the two stories you told, both of which made me cry, I'm sure the families of those wonderful people and those wonderful people are so grateful that you were there to help them through some very difficult moments. It like probably the most difficult moments they ever had. So I'm so grateful that for you and grateful for your ministry through your work and that we have gotten to know you better in the Salt Lake congregation. I'm certainly grateful for that as well. So thank you so much for being on the podcast with us, with me.
Yeah, and, of course.
For telling us about what it means to be a music therapist. And I mean, I'm not going to look into it necessarily, but I'm going to remember this when people in my life need that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that that will happen. And I'm going to remember to ask for, hey, we need a music therapist here.
Yes, we are constantly advocating. That is like half of the work of a music therapist is advocating because it's not something that's really well known, you know? But like when you see it and when you experience it, you realize what an essential part of the treatment team it is for in so many different scenarios, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It's treating the whole self rather than just the body.
It is. Well, yeah.
Consider me an advocate as well now, because I am definitely on the side of music therapists too.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Thank you so much, Emily, for being with me today. I really appreciate it a lot.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here and grateful to be connected to the community of Christ and the congregation of Salt Lake. It's made a huge impact on my life and it's been a huge turning point in my life. So thank you. Thank you for all you do.
That's so wonderful to hear. I really appreciate it. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.